Good afternoon and welcome to Juno Afternoon for Friday, January 20th, 2017. Jeff Brown here today. We'll be getting a rundown of the Telluride Mountain Film Festival with Colette Costa. We've got a preview of Friday Fireside Lecture featuring Pete Schneider talking about spying on wildlife. Neela Cosgrove, Deputy City Manager, will be here to talk about public participation in the city's budget process. And Sarah Schaefer will be here to highlight Saturday's Seafood Festival. Latin Writers Almanac, Murnaut, Music and Mushnoor today on a June afternoon. Well, the forecast for the rest of today, mostly clear skies, high temperatures around 30 degrees. Forecast tonight, clear with lows in the, around 20. Forecast for Saturday, partly cloudy skies with high temperatures in the mid-20s.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Indigenous women are among those planning to march in Washington, D.C. Saturday. Grassroots groups have coordinated the event being called the Women's March on Washington to raise awareness about women's issues and call on government leaders to protect their rights. As part of the National March, Native Americans in Philanthropy and other Native groups have partnered for Indigenous Women Rise and are encouraging marchers to show support by wearing turquoise scarves or shawls for a visual representation of Native identity. Haskell Indian Nations University in Lawrence, Kansas this week hosted Acting Deputy Director of the Bureau of Indian Education, Bart Stevens, to officially open the spring semester for students. The new U.S. President and the future of Indian education were among topics students discussed with the official. Rhonda Lavaldo has more.
The national anthem sung in Cherokee started off Haskell's spring convocation, and it was politics that had Haskell student Shannon Hawkins say she felt the need to ask the acting deputy director of the Bureau of Indian Education about incoming President Donald Trump.
I'm a little uneased about the president-elect and him coming into office and him not necessarily being truthful or upfront about what he's going to do or what he's going to say, and he doesn't seem to have a good rep with Native country now.
Bart Stevens came as the keynote speaker for the event. He hoped his message of continuing higher education, along with talking about the transition, would motivate students to go back and help their communities.
And the need for it in Indian country to have these students become experts in their field, and also just to support language and culture and the needs of our communities back home in Indian country.
New student Susan Hawkins says she felt inspired by Stephen's speech.
I thought it was really great. It really prompted me to pursue on what I have decided on my career, and I'm going to try and do the elementary education and multimedia communications.
Stevens emphasized he is there for the students, staff, and faculty, and they can always get in touch with him if they need to. This is Rhonda Lavaldo for National Native News.
Funeral services are planned this week in Alaska for a Yupik woman who helped create the Alaska Tribal Health System. For nearly 50 years, Sally Smith played a key role in transforming an underfunded, understaffed, and ill-equipped health system for Native people into one that is a model for tribal self-governance. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes reports.
Sally Smith was a petite woman who showed up to meetings early, well-prepared and stylishly dressed and groomed, even after a red-eye back from Washington, D.C., where she testified before Congress and went to countless meetings working to improve health services for Alaska Natives and other Native Americans. Valerie Davidson heads the Alaska Department of Health and Human Services.
She was a national force. I mean, she served as chair of the National Indian Health Board. She met with the numerous secretaries of Health and Human Services, many presidents, many heads of the Centers for Disease Control, heads of the National Institutes of Health.
Smith was one of a group of tribal health leaders who worked from the 70s into the 90s with the Indian Health Service to transfer IHS programs to tribal management. The shift brought hundreds of millions of dollars in new money into the Alaska Tribal Health System. It gave Alaska tribes the opportunity to create innovative programs, to manage budgets, and to hire staff, all tailored to address Alaska Native health issues. Sally Smith is the mother of four sons. She died of leukemia January 10th. Sally Smith was 70 years old. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Utah Dene Bekea. Thank you, President Obama, for proclaiming Bears Ears a national monument, protecting ancestral lands, ensuring our people will continue to hunt, collect firewood and herbs, and hold ceremonies. Learn more at protectbearsears.org. Support by VisionMaker Media, whose mission is to empower and engage Native people to tell stories. VisionMaker Media is currently pleased to offer public media internships. You can find out more at visionmakermedia.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned into June afternoon. First guest is Cliff Costa here to talk about the Telluride Mountain Film Festival.
What?
It took the words out of my mouth.
I've been taking this language course on Dolphin, just like in the first couple months there, but so far it's just a...
It sounds just like Flipper.
It's good. I know. Well, it's funny because I can watch Flipper now and I can see where they were messing with the subtitles. You cannot believe what that dolphin was saying. Mostly it was like, get me out of here.
A little close to Lloyd Bridges, but more like Flipper.
Well, boy, it's always a good time here in the old studio. Hey, Mountain Film Festival. I think this is the 18th or 19th one that they've had, and I think it's about the fourth or fifth that we've shown. I think I started showing them right after we took over the Gold Town there, and what is it, Jeff? You think I know? I have all these notes, but they're all useless. It's a collection of short films that are. It's part of the Telluride, and it's a bit like Banff, but it's a little less outdoor porn, not in that way, but in the other way, where they focus more on environmental stories, conservation stories, short biographies of people who are doing work in areas of land management or animal management or things on rain and water and streams. But there's also a lot of outdoor porn, too. Yeah, fully clothed, of course. So we have, look at this list of, so we're doing, here's the kooky part. This is where we always lose people. Actually, we lost people the minute I started talking. I understand that. There's three different programs of short films, and there are different films in each of the programs. So there's one program that's just for kids, although adults are certainly welcome. It's not like that weird thing when you go to a public pool and it's just kids and you feel like a weird adult going in there. It's not like that. Anyone can go. And some of the kids' movies are also in the adult programs, so, and none of them are inappropriate. It's nothing like that. It's just mostly, you know, the skiers and the swearing. But the kids' program is awesome. It's only about an hour and a half long, and it's a mix. There's a couple animated films in there, but there's things on, you know, a travel, there's, you know, Bolivian one, there's a couple little skiing ones. There's a great one on this called Throw, on this yo-yoer. He's an inner city youth, sort of very marginalized, had a really rough home life, all that nonsense. How do you wear these headphones, Jeff? Oh, I'm getting attacked! But he took up yo-yoing as partly a form of therapy and partly a form of sort of escaping. Like he says, when he's using his yo-yo, it sort of becomes a zen moment for him. And I've actually put that movie in the adult program as well, because it's really well done. And these guys do amazing yo-yo tricks. I don't know if you know what it's like being kind of a weird kid who did weird things. Like, I don't know, like tying up balloons or something. But I used a yo-yo a lot when I was in school, and I got a bit of a reputation, mostly for being a weirdo.
Is this the balloon? Did you use it for self-defense, yo-yo?
It was. I found it to be very, very helpful with self-defense and keeping people away from you. Anyway, so that's in there. It's a great kids program. Then we have these two other programs that I am cleverly calling Program A and Program B. Pretty good, huh? They both feature different films. I think there's like 1, 2, 3, 4 presents. There's like 12 or so movies in each one. Program A we're calling Adventure and Adrenaline, and that's focused more on the doing. So there's movies on marathon runners and slackliners, this crazy guy who does a slackline. That's basically like a people that walk on rope between these two huge things somewhere in the desert. It's really cool. Skiing, base jumping, biking, urban surfing, whatever the hell that means. I think those are people that surf in ditches, kayaking, but it also includes photography and stuff. And then the other program, Program B, is what we're calling People, Places, and Things to See. These are more biopics. There's a great one on fly fishing. There's one from Alaska called the Super Salmon, and I think that was made right around here. And it's about the environment and dams and how it affects salmon. That's actually the feature film in that one. It's 25 minutes. There's one on Navajo culture. There's one on conservation. There's a great one on the revival of the pronghorn cattle. I don't know what they sound like.
Kind of like a dolphin.
Wilbur. There's a great one on a guy who backpacks with his dog. So it's not just people talking about stuff. There's a great one on modern farming. And so that's more on the conservation environmental side of it. Both programs, I think, are pretty rad, which I said that today in front of someone who's under the age of 20, and they said, what? And I was like, rad? And they fell out laughing, and they were like, did you just say rad? I said, yeah, I said rad. And then she elbowed the girl next to her. She's like, she said rad. The people still say that? So I guess people don't say that, but I say it. So that's what we have. And it's going to be, it opens tomorrow, because, of course, we're also doing Jump this weekend, the Juno Underground Motion Picture Society, which is the Alaska Robotics team. All local films, that's, what's today, Friday?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's, so Jump is tonight at 7 and 9 and tomorrow at 7 and 9. And then the Telluride Mountain Film Festival starts Saturday afternoon. We play Sunday, I think Monday, Tuesday, into next weekend as well. So there's like four or five different opportunities for you to see these. Because I think you should see all three shows. They're great shows. And kids are only $5. Adults, you got a job, you can afford to get a ticket. And
you selling kids for $5?
All kids are $5. Sometimes you get two. Somebody left a kid in my theater once and just put him in the lost and found with the hats and the gloves and the water bottles. He's still back there.
I went last night to the Jump Society Film Festival.
Yeah.
And I got thinking, do you watch every movie that comes to your shop?
I try to. I really do. I don't watch the ones that are what I call no-brainers, like Moonlight. I didn't pre-watch Moonlight because I knew I do extensive reading on them, and I look at all the various articles that the distributors send me, so I get a good feel for the film. But the any of the smaller ones, I absolutely try to watch every one. I probably watch average about a movie a day, I'd say.
So you just sit in the theater and with a bag of popcorn and watch?
Yeah, like, just as my mother would say to me, all you do is watch movies all day. Well, yes, yes. And you know what? When I went to college, you know why I went to film school? Because I wanted to watch movies all day. When somebody asked me when I was like 12 years old, what do you want to do when you grow up? The worst question in the world. I said, I just want to watch movies. And it took a long time to figure out how to make that into a job. Not a job that pays anything, but some kind of a job. But you can, yeah. So kids out there, if someone says, what are you gonna do when you grow up? And you say, I want to chew bubble gum. Guess what? That's a job.
Somebody's gotta do it.
Someone's gotta do it. Yeah. But I have watched virtually all of the Telluride short films. They're not all, my bag of wax. I'm not that into. Well, let's face it, I'm really not into anything that happens outside. But they're very engaging films, and there's some really amazing camera work in there. As we were just talking about people strapping GoPros to the top of their heads and walking around, except these people are strapping GoPros and jumping out of airplanes and kayaking down gorges. So
is there a mountain called the Telluride Mountain?
Is there a place called that? I think so. I don't know. Jeff, you think I know things? Look, it's on the internet. I get it. I show it. I'm good. So the Telluride, there's two things. There's Telluride Film Festival, which is a huge film festival that focuses on outdoor stuff, and it's very near. What's the other big one? Not Sundance.
Banff.
Banff. And then they have an offshoot of that, which is the Telluride Mountain Film Tour, which is what we have, which are the short film variations of that. And, by the way, may I say, I have a free ticket to this year's Telluride Mountain Film Festival, the big one that they have in Telluride, Colorado. It's a three-day pass. I'm thinking I'm going to give that away as a prize for something. I haven't figured out how. So I guess I'm just putting that in the universe. Don't really have a follow-up
to that. So what time of film start tonight?
The jump is at 7 and 9. And then Telluride stuff starts Saturday afternoon. I can't remember. I think at 2 o'clock. I think the kids show is Saturday, Sunday at 2 p.m., and then the other programs are filtered in around that. The schedule's on the goldtownnick.com. It gets a little confusing because there's three schedules, so you have to pay attention to the A and the B, and one day when I figure out a better way to do that, which I never will, then it won't matter because I won't.
Yeah. Right, Costa, thanks for coming in.
Jeff Brown, my goodness. You can't hear them, but the city is clapping.
Your goodness has nothing to do with this.
Thank God. Then I drifted.
Thank
from my garden gates a snail, that's what it is. The lock up on my garden gates a snail, that's what it is. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is. Caterpillar sheds his skin to find a butterfly within. Caterpillar sheds his skin to find a butterfly within. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain. Oh, Juanita, oh, Juanita. Oh, Juanita, I call your name. Oh, the snow will be a blinding sight to see as it lies on yonder hillside. Lock up on my garden gates, a snail, that's what it is. Lock up on my garden gates, a snail, that's what it is. Caterpillar sheds his skin to find a butterfly within. Caterpillar sheds his skin to find a butterfly within. First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is. First there is a mountain, then
and here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 20th of January, 2017. It was on this day in 1961, Robert Frost recited his poem, The Gift, outright at the inauguration of President John F. Kennedy. Robert Frost, who was 87 years old, he'd written a new poem for the occasion entitled Dedication, but the ribbon in his typewriter was rather faint, so he could barely see it because the sun was in his eyes. So instead he recited from memory The Gift outright. It's the birthday of Federico Fellini, the film director, born Rimini, Italy, 1920, best known to us as the director of the film La Dolce Vita, came out in 1960. It's the birthday of the novelist Tammy Hoag, born in Cresco, Iowa, 1959, grew up in Harmony, Minnesota, wrote her first book, Black Pony, when she was in the third grade, just 9 years old. And then in her 30s, she became the author of romance novels. Wrote about 20 of them, then tried her hand at a thriller. It was called Night Sins. Came out in 1988, made the New York Times bestseller list, and so did the 14 books that followed. Tammy Hoag, her most recent book is The Bitter Season, latest in a series of thrillers featuring two homicide detectives in Minneapolis, Sam Kovac and Nikki Liska. And it's the birthday of the comedian George Burns, born on the Lower East Side of New York City, 1896, born Nathan Birnbaum. His father was a cantor, a coat presser. The boy started working 7 years old, selling newspapers and shining shoes. Started singing harmony with other boys in a group called the Pee Wee Quartet. Soon he was on the vaudeville circuit, performing with a seal and doing trick roller skating. Performed under various names, including Captain Betts, Buddy Lynx, Willie Delight, and also George Burns. He met Gracie Allen. They fell in love. They got married. They went off on the vaudeville circuit themselves. And their television show, The Burns and Allen Show, is one of the most popular shows of the 1950s. At the end of every show, George would turn to Allen and say goodnight, Gracie. And she would say, goodnight, Gracie. George Burns, famous for his cigars, four a day, went on to make the movie The Sunshine Boys with Walter Matthau, and then played God in the movie Oh God. He said, why shouldn't I play God? Anything I do at my age is a miracle. Here's a poem for today by C.K. Williams, Snow 1. All night snow, then near dawn freezing rain, so that by morning the whole city glistens in a glaze of high-pitched, meticulously polished brilliance, everything rounded off, the cars submerged nearly to their windows in the unbroken drifts lining the narrow alleys, the buildings rising from the trunk-like integuments the wind has molded against them. Underlit clouds, blurred violet bars, the rear guard of the storm still hang in the east, immobile over the flat river basin of the Delaware. Beyond them, nothing, the washed sky, one vivid wisp of pale smoke rising waveringly but emphatically into the brilliant ether. No one is out yet but Catherine, who closes the door behind her and starts up the street. A poem by C.K. Williams, Snow, 1, from his collected poems, published by Fur, Strauss, and Giroux, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, brain training developed by scientists and game designers who turn cognitive research tasks into challenging games. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices, subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Take shelter from the winter storms this Saturday night, January 21st, at the first barn dance of the new year. Dance to live music by impromptu, playing traditional contra dance tunes. Caller Susie Kendig will teach and lead you through the dances. The fun starts at 7:30 at St. Anne's Parish Hall downtown on 5th Street. As always, you don't need any experience or a partner. Discounts for age 25 and under and free for JVs and AmeriCorps. Sponsored by Juno Folk Dancers with help from KRNN. Barn Dance, Saturday.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
27 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into June Afternoon. Our next guest is Pete Schneider. He's a national research specialist. He's doing a show tonight at the Annapolis Visitor Center all about spying on wildlife.
Right. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Thanks for coming down. So what does a wildlife specialist do?
Well, there's a number of different opportunities out there to work at the visitor centers. A lot going on, obviously. And aside from that great big chunk of ice we call the Mendenhall, there's all kinds of other natural resources out there. So lots of opportunities to work with the salmon. Everybody knows about the bears, of course. But then we have so many other resources, beavers, and all sorts of birds and wildlife. So it's a great collection of opportunities.
What got you interested in wildlife in the first place?
Oh, that's a great question. I think, a little bit of Marlon Perkins when I was a kid, believe it or not. I watched a lot of that, and then it kind of transferred from there to Marty Stauffer. And by the time I got into high school, I thought, oh, yeah, this is what I want to do. And so I just kept at it. And then when I got a chance to move here, this is obviously no shortage of fish and wildlife up here. So it's a dream job.
As far as Marlon Perkins and Jim go, who did you want to be? Did you want to be Marlon or Jim?
Right. Well, there's a lot of rumors about who did all the work, but everybody really knows that Jim was the guy that got out and did a lot of the stuff, and Marlon took a lot of the credit. But, boy, you look back, and they got to get out and just be out there. And you realize later on there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes, but what we got to see as viewers was just nothing but great stuff. So it all looked like fun to me.
Do you have a favorite animal?
Oh, man. Favorite animal? That's a great question. Well, I know I got a dog that's pretty good. I like that dog. But when I was a kid, it was all about wild cats. But of course, moving to Southeast Alaska, there's really no cats to speak of. So I don't know if I have a favorite animal. I might have to come back to you on that one.
But you're talking about spying on animals tonight. What do you mean spying?
Well, so this is. These cameras are set up in a way that obviously the animals, the wildlife, hopefully if we do it right, it doesn't affect their behavior. And if you can do it in that fashion, then it kind of seems like spying. And the fish, of course, they don't change up what they're doing with the camera in the water. But what they do give you is an opportunity to see the animals in a unique way, in a way we don't normally get to see. And of course, anybody that's into photography, they know that a picture that sells is a picture that is just, there's something different about it. And with these cameras, there's something different about that. If you can put a camera and film the fish from above, that's neat. But if you can put it underwater, that's even better. And for the beaver den camera that we have, that's a camera that goes inside the lodge. And, of course, that really feels like spying. And you get to see behaviors and see the beavers in behaving in ways that you normally would be unavailable to us from outside the lodge, of course.
What's your favorite, binoculars or monoculars?
Well, I did like Hogan's Heroes when I was a kid, so, of course, Colonel Klink was all about the monocle, and that was pretty neat, but I think binoculars are really the better way.
What techniques do you use for spying on animals?
So when I started off, it's all video. It's all been installation of what started off as analog cameras. It's all got to be waterproof, and it's all got to be protected with conduit, because there's so many things out there that'll chew on the cables. And so everything's got to start with a video camera that has waterproof capabilities. And then for the fish, it's pretty simple. There's a lot of waterproof cameras out there, and that has been pretty simple. The beaver cameras have to be infrared, and so that complicates it a little bit more. So that's mostly the technique I use. And then usually the struggle has been trying to figure out how to power. I got to power them, and I got to protect them. And once I got that, I have an opportunity to actually share the footage with folks.
What are you going to be showing tonight?
So tonight I'm going to spend time showing people a little of the background history of how the cameras came to be. It's relatively recent, and given the advances in technology, the Forest Service is not always at the forefront of those advances. And so it's taken us a little bit of time, but it's still neat to, I want to share the story of how the cameras came about and how we've brought them along and why we brought them along. to the point where we have, and how we try to make them available to the public, and give a little insight on just exactly how we make it happen. There's, like I mentioned with the Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes, and so and I want to share that a little bit too.
How do you find the animals in the first place?
Well,
beavers are easy because they got the dam.
Right. So, yeah, the fish is the easiest, for sure. That the timing is all set up. You know where they're going to go. I am a fisheries biologist by trade, and so I've got a pretty good feel for where the fish would like to hang out and where they'll pool up. And so if you can get a camera in that spot, you're pretty rock solid. You're going to be good to go. And the beavers, once we got the fish cam going, there's a lot of folks that wanted wildlife. And, oh, yeah, can you do a wildlife cam? And that presents a whole set of challenges. But the beavers, of course, are fairly static if you can get them inside the lodge. Once these animals get outside a lodge, and, of course, the bears move around all over the place, it's really difficult to install a camera, have it set up, and then film. Because the animals move, but of course inside the lodge it's much more stable. So that's kind of why we lit on focusing on putting a camera inside the lodge. And that presents some of its own challenges, which I'm going to share with folks tonight to see how I do it.
One of our favorite summer memories was seeing Lori Craig directing traffic and bears at the same time.
Right. Yeah, I don't think she learned that at FAA school, but she does have that technique down. A lot of folks that spend any time out there working, they gotta be able to figure out all that. And then the radio's chattering, and then people are asking you where the glacier is, for example. That all that happens at the same time.
Is it expensive if people want to buy their own camera?
You know, it is not, actually. The prices are coming down quite a bit. If you want an analog camera, that's really cheap stuff. All this stuff is primarily driven by the security industry, and that's how I started off. When I'm buying my cameras initially, it was all looking in security magazines for covert operation type stuff, things that maybe detectives would use. Of course, it's advanced since then, but the big change is everything switching from analog to digital. And now my challenge has been to meet all those criteria I mentioned earlier, getting the waterproof, maybe infrared, audio, all that stuff, and have it be in a digital format where I can live stream it. That presents new challenges. So it's constantly evolving, and we're trying to keep up with the technology to give the best possible product to the public.
Yeah, two shows tonight, one at 6:30 and one at 8 o'clock.
That's correct.
And it's free.
It's free, yeah. That's the best part of all.
How much are you able to squish on the internet?
Oh, that's a great question. So being at the end of the road as we are, we don't have the greatest internet capability out there. That probably doesn't come as a surprise to anybody. So we're working on that. But right now I'm limited to 1 megabyte of upload speed, which if anybody geeks out on understanding all that, which I've had to learn myself, that's not much. And if you want anything with HD, that's out of the question. I can't even fully utilize the analog quality cameras that I have for image upload.
What's the secret to knowing where the animals are going to be?
All right. A lot of patience. It probably is not a surprise to anybody. It's a lot of patience and a lot of trial and error.
Cool. Anything you'd like to add, I forgot to ask.
Oh, right. No, I think it's just important to understand that this is because it's kind of a unique thing. What we've noticed over time is when we provide these images for folks, we put them on live monitors for people that visitors, whether they're locals or whether they're from out of town, and they come out and they look up at a monitor and they'll see fish swimming by. If they think for 1 minute that it's a pre-recorded, which I think most people assume, and we have signs that say it's live, but we've noticed a lot of people don't read. It's a lot of work to read all those signs, and it's kind of natural to ignore a lot of that stuff. Don't smoke, don't eat, don't do all the. But we want you to have fun, and it's no different. But when they look up and they think it's pre-recorded, they're not interested. But if you get a chance to say, hey, you guys realize this is live. This is going on right now. It piques their interest just about every single time. People stop and they look back up and they are actually genuinely interested. They'll stay longer. They'll start asking questions. And I think for us to make that connection, to be able to share that with folks and take them to another level of experience with that, I think it's really rewarding. And of course, it's one of the things that we try to do just in the Forest Service in general. We try to make that connection for people.
Pete Snyder, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Jeff.
I know you deceive me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles.
Oh yeah.
If you think that I don't know about the little tricks you play and never see you when deliberately you put things in my way, well, here's a poke at you. You're gonna choke on it too. You're gonna lose that smile because all the while I could see for miles and miles. I could see for miles and miles. I could see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles.
Oh yeah.
You took advantage of my trust in you when I was so far away. I saw you holding lots of other guys, and now you've got the nerve to say that you still want me. Well, that says maybe, but you gotta stand trial, because all the while I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles. Surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles.
Oh yeah.
The Eiffel Tower in the Taj Mahal. Choke on it too. You're gonna need that smile, because all the while I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and 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 miles.
It's 41 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into Juno Afternoon. Our next guest here in the studio is Robert Barr, the library director, and Mila Cosgrove, who's the deputy city manager. Thank you so much for coming back today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff.
So today we're going to be talking about the budget,
That's right. We're talking about the exciting world of citizen engagement in the CBJ budgeting process. We're starting off a new process this year, and we're hoping that people will be interested and available to learn more and give us their feedback.
How much money are we talking about?
Well, the overall city budget is about 320, 330 million. Right. Sorry, yeah. I was thinking in the wrong, putting the decimal point in the wrong place. Really, what we're going to be focusing in on, though, are the places where we're expending local sales tax and property tax dollars. So that's about $73 million of general government services. We do all kinds of things. The city has a wide variety of services. We have police, we have fire, we have parks and rec, and amongst all of those various departments, there's a multitude of programs. We're hoping to go out into the community and say, of these things that we're doing, what's important to you? What are your priorities? What would you like us to see continue for us to do? Are there things you would like us to stop doing? Or are there other things that we're not even considering that, that you think might rise to the top? So it's really a way to get some feedback and hope to hear what people are thinking about. After all, it's the city. It's everybody's city. We want to make sure we're meeting their needs.
That's right, yeah.
How did you do it before? What's new about it? Other than the word new in the box.
Well, the new is important, of course. Well, I think in the past, it's fair to say that we've always hoped that people understand what the city does and that they're tracking how we're expending the dollars that they're contributing to the community. And we do a pretty good job of putting all that information out in charts and tables and narrative format. And if you're kind of a government geek or a budget geek, you can follow along. But I don't think that describes most of us fairly. And so what's new is that we're sort of taking a step back and we're saying, hey, here are the things that we do offer to you. Here's how much they cost. And what do you think about that? For instance, what do you think about the idea of having a swimming pool or an ice rink or library services?
Exactly.
We think what we do is really important and we feel really good about our programs and services, but we often don't take the time to really ask people directly.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing.
Yeah, and we think it's important that we do that, particularly in this fiscal climate. We know there's quite a bit of uncertainty at the state level right now, and so we want to be prepared if we do end up facing budget tightening or reductions. It's important for us to have a good view of our community's priorities.
In kind of what we're doing, it's a bit of a holistic process, so to speak. So we're going to look at everything. We're going to educate people on all the pieces that we're doing, so that when it comes to some decisions, if it comes to some decisions, we can answer the question about what should we stop doing or doing differently, having considered all of the options, not just the one thing that happens to be up in front of the public at any given time. We think that's important as well.
But how did the public submit their input prior to what you're doing now?
Well, they would often come to Assembly Finance Committee meetings, as an example, and sit through and listen to the discussion on the budget, and that is still very important. We don't want to discourage people from doing that. But what would happen, let's say, is we'd come up with something where a great example is the Augustus Brown Pool. A couple years ago, we talked about maybe closing the pool, and a lot of people who were really passionate about the pool came out of the woodwork to say, don't do that. We love the pool. And it was great to hear their voice and very important. Sometimes, though, what doesn't get answered is if we keep the pool, what's the impact on everything else? And really what we want to be able to say is here's everything we're doing. Help us prioritize of all of those things that we do, what's most important to you? And if we had to make a change, what would be the most palatable change to make? I don't know what you'd add to that, Robert.
I think that's fair. That's a pretty good descriptor of why we're doing what we're doing this time around, because in our typical process, we don't really get that holistic approach, which is why we're doing a little bit more this time around to include all of those perspectives and all of the programs and services that we offer.
How often do you find that you're doing all this work, so you get people to talk, and they never come down and talk about it until it seems like it's too late?
Often, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I think, like most of us, don't pay attention until we feel like we're backed into a corner, and we'd rather do it a little more proactively this time. We'd rather ask in advance. Another part of this that we're actually very excited about as well is we're going to have a couple of general public meetings where we're hoping to sort of educate the public, sort of a CBJ 101. What are all of the things that the city does? Because like I said, it's a wide variety of things. Where does our money come from? What are all the various sources that it comes from? And then how are the various operating departments funded? What portion of it, as an example, is paid for by fees and charges? And what's sales tax? And where does state funding enter into the mix? And so part of it is we're hoping to do some just general education. And then through that, we're hoping to entice some people to come in and sit with us for a couple of hours in focus groups where we actually take them through a process and they'll have an opportunity to really take a deeper dive and give us some prioritization of public services.
Are you having anything scheduled in the near future?
Yes, there are.
We do, yeah. So those general education meetings that Mila was talking about are scheduled for, the first one is scheduled for February 2nd, and that's going to be downtown in the Assembly Chambers at 7 p.m. That's our evening one. And then 2 days later on the 4th, we're having another general public meeting to talk about the city budget and all the different city services and the processes that we're going to be going through in the Valley Library at 10 a.m. That's on a Saturday, on the February 10th. February 4th at 10 a.m.
Is this information available on your website?
It will be soon. So we are developing a new website that just talks about this process for going through the priority-driven budget, and it will be up pretty soon here. We'll also, as soon as that's live, there will be an online survey that folks can take that will allow them to weigh in on the community priorities that our assembly has already established.
In the work that you've done so far, what do you think are the main concerns of the public?
Well, we're just starting the community public outreach, so I don't know that I can talk from a broad standpoint, but I would say in general.
Historically,
I think people are concerned that the services represent their general needs, that there are as a broad enough spectrum of services that sort of address the various populations. And then, of course, I think people are always concerned to see that we have really solid core programs like police and fire and water and wastewater, those types of things that people normally don't think about until something goes wrong.
That's right.
Remind me again when the meetings are currently scheduled are.
Sure. We have two public information meetings set. We have Thursday, February 2nd, 7 p.m., Assembly Chambers. And we have another meeting Saturday, February 4th, 10 a.m. at the Valley Library. Come hear about CBJ services in general, CBJ budget, and how you can get involved and have your voice heard.
I think it'd be fun sometimes to, and it may not be the word to use, but invite the city budget makers. You're probably one of them. What's involved in the whole process?
Oh, what's involved in the process of setting the budget? That is a complicated topic. So everything gets looked at from the ground up. We generally work off the previous year's budget, but we have to consider everything. Revenue sources, so how much tax projections we think we're going to get, sales, property, state funding, et cetera. We'll have to consider what the school district's needs are and what's coming out of the state in terms of education funding. We take a look at all of our enterprise areas and all the grants, everything that the city is involved in terms of funding. It's a long process. The manager submits his proposed budget by April 1st. And then every Wednesday in April and May up to and including June 15th if needed, the assembly is hard at work on Wednesday evenings from 5:30 on, hearing about the budget, making decisions, listening to the community, and coming up with that final budget document. And the process that we're going through will be one of the tools that they can use in achieving an end budget.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you'd like to add to mind for anyone to ask?
I don't think so. I think we've hit it all. I think we would just like to really encourage people that are interested to get out to these public meetings. And if you are interested in participating in one of our focus groups, which we'll talk about at those meetings, we need people to be engaged. We We, like Mila said, we think that the services that the city is providing are good and useful and beneficial in our community, and we want to validate that and confirm that with the public and get a sense of our overall community priorities.
So if people want to call, if they're interested in a focus group, or if you just want more information, you can call us at 586-5240. That's the city manager's office. We'll field your call and answer your questions. And you can also go to our website, www.juno.org, and we should have some written information up in the next
24 hours.
24
probably.
Hours,
yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks so much for coming down.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
When I was just a child, my life was oh so simple, and the ways of the great world seemed strange and funny. Then when I was a young man, I learned of that machine. It turns out all those bales of precious money.
Minutes before the hour, and we're tuned into it in the afternoon. Our last guest on this show today is Sarah Schaefer, here to talk about the Seafood Festival, which is coming up tomorrow.
Yes, no, it's actually in a week, thank God.
I got my tickets.
You already got your ticket? That's good, because Seafood Festival, KTL's biggest fundraiser of the year, is Saturday, January 28th, so that's Saturday in a week, and it's kicked off with a beer tasting. Tutored beer tasting by the Alaskan Brewing Company. If you haven't gotten your tickets yet, we have 4 left. Can you believe it, Jeff? 4 tickets.
That's a great event. That's why.
It's a, yeah. And you know what? People like their beer before the seafood. So 4 tickets for the beer tasting, and then we have a little over 100 tickets left for the Seafood Festival. So if you haven't gotten your tickets yet, now is the time. And, yeah, I think it's going to be a great event. We have 8 participating restaurants: Breeze Inn, The Rookery, Saffron Salt, Coconut Thai Cafe, TK McGuire's at the Prospector, V Salador, and Twilight Cafe. And then we have desserts by Copa, Glacial Grinds, and Heritage Coffee Company. And I can announce the first menu items that the chef's gotten back to me with. So The Rookery is going to do salmon chorizo with miso, avocado, and nori chips. And the Prospector got back to me, and they're going to do a halibut ceviche with house-made tortilla chips and poblano pepper bacon fettuccine with salmon. So each restaurant is getting 60 pounds of fish that they're preparing, and that fish is generously donated by Taco Fisheries. So it's really a culinary showcase event for Juno, and we're excited. We have 2 sponsors, Seafood Processors Association, Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. So it's going to be great. We have music, too.
And there's an auction.
And talk about the auction. I am here entering auction items like crazy, because we have a pre-bidding for the auction. And the pre-bidding goes live in an hour. So at 5 p.m. today, we're going to open up pre-bidding for the auction. And, you know, if you're planning your summer now and you're looking for plane tickets or stuff to do, like whale watching and helicopter tours and those type of things, or gift certificates to certain restaurants, then our auction is probably a good place for you. We've got artwork and jewelry, and we're still accepting donations, too. So
if you want to get highlighted in our online auction catalog, and then, of course, at the actual event, you can still get your auction items to us here at KTO. You can just drop them off, fill out a donation form. We'd be delighted to have you as part of KTO's auction. And I think it's gonna be good. Are you going to donate, Jeff? Are you going to bid on some stuff?
I want to see it first.
You want to see it first? Well, you have the opportunity at 5 p.m. And, of course, you don't have to be at the event. If your pre-bid is high enough and you can secure an item like that, then you don't have to be at the event to, get the item.
But chances are you're going to be outbid by the person who's
bidding. Chances are. We hope, certainly, that bids go up and, Salt's doing the bar, a full bar for us at Seafood Fest. So we hope the atmosphere is going to be great and people are in bidding mode. And, that's what we're hoping for.
If people want to donate, how can they do that?
Well, you can either call me here at the station or send me an email at sarahs@ktoo.org. Or you can just call the station or come by the station and drop off your items. We'll take some lovely pictures, put it online, and feature your generosity on the air. So I think I'm going to hopefully come again next week and highlight some items that we have.
Please do.
Okay, oh, wonderful, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Sarah Shaver, thanks for coming down.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
Forecast for tonight, clear skies, low temperatures around 10 degrees. Forecast for Saturday, partly cloudy skies with highs in the mid-20s. Saturday night, cloudy skies. Sunday, cloudy skies with highs about 30 degrees.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on Translators K27.